Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
What is it going to take to get people to get shots in arms?
I don't know. You tell me. Folks supposed to have common sense. But it's time to start blaming the unvaccinated folks, not the regular folks. It's the unvaccinated folks that are letting us down.
That's Republican governor from Alabama, Kay Ivey, last week in an exchange with a reporter about the rising number of COVID infections in that state. Alabama has some of the lowest vaccine numbers in the nation. Today, Dr. Anthony Fauci says the CDC is now considering revising its mask guidelines. And thousands of people in Missouri are being told to mask up starting today. The city of St. Louis and the entire county now requiring masks to be worn indoors again, even if vaccinated against the coronavirus. Missouri, Texas, Florida, making up 40% of all new infections in the U.S. What is going on? And why are we going in the wrong direction when it comes to COVID infections? Well, we have a COVID-19 update tonight on this Medical Monday. We've got a lot of information to share with you tonight. My guests tonight are Dr. Yolandra Hancock. She's a pediatrician and advisory board member for Mask America. Also joining us tonight, Sherry Thompson. She is the coalition lead for the Ad Council, the COVID-19 Vaccine Education Initiative. She's going to tell us about something that's happening really big tomorrow that will impact a lot of people, we hope, as it relates to vaccine hesitancy. If you have any comments, if you have any questions, and I'm sure you do, as always, when it comes to our COVID-19 updates, give us a call. Lines are open right now at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I invite you to tweet me if you like at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Hancock, thanks for joining me. Good to hear from you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Sherry, thanks for joining the conversation as well.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, too.
So let's talk about this event tomorrow. Now, it's not open to the public, but this has to do with the Tuskegee study. And we've heard really over the past 7 or 8 months, ever since the vaccine became available to the public, about a lot of people, particularly people of color, talking about the Tuskegee experiment and using that as a reason why they won't take the vaccine. Sherry, explain to me what's happening related to that discussion tomorrow.
No, absolutely. And that's such a great point. At the Ad Council, back in February, we launched a campaign called It's Up to You, which has all been around educating everyone across America around COVID-19 vaccines. And we've had dedicated efforts in communities of color because we all know that communities of color, especially the Black community, have been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. And we also saw in our research that the Black community has lower vaccine confidence, really due to part of what you just said. You know, we know that there is mistrust linked to the government and medical community. And in all of the research that we've done, Tuskegee has come up time and time and time again. So we wanted to really get underneath it. We really wanted to learn more so that we can better educate the Black community around what happened and really use it to help inspire us and really empower us. So we've partnered with Joy Collective, a fantastic agency that has really helped lead all of the work that we've done in the Black community, and partnered also with the Black Coalition Against COVID. So tomorrow, to your point, we have an event called The Legacy, Tragedy to Triumph, and really bringing to life a documentary that we developed with the great direction of our director, Deborah Riley Draper. And so we're actually going to have 5 of the descendants that are featured in that documentary to really help bring that documentary to life and to really tell the stories around the Black men that were impacted by the study and how it impacted their lives. And at the end of the day, they wanted to improve their health, and they were denied treatment. So it's about helping to educate people on what really happened, because that's not what's happening now with the COVID-19 vaccines, right? And we really want to make sure that people get the facts and they really use that to help them make a more informed choice around what's best for them and their family. So the second part of the event will be around talking about the path forward, talking about the latest in the pandemic and COVID-19 vaccines. We have Dr. Cameron Webb from the White House, Senior Policy Advisor for COVID-19 Equity, that will be on. We have Howard University medical students that will also be a part of the panel. We also have Washington, D.C. Health Commissioner Dr. Brenda Nesbitt in the house, Howard University Hospital CEO Anita Jenkins in the house, and an inspirational performance to close out the program with no other than someone who D.C. knows well, Raheem Devon. So again, it's about inspiring and empowering the Black community based on these stories. So to your point, they won't use what happened in Tuskegee as a way to hinder them, but they use it as a way to empower them to learn more and to really improve their health. Mm.
There is a live stream, isn't that correct?
Absolutely. We heard some great news today. You heard it as well with Roland Martin. We all know Roland Martin, and he will be live streaming it on all of his channels, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. So you can go on and find that out. But we also have some extra seats still available. So whoever is listening, if you would like to join us in the house at no other than Howard University, we are going to be at the Crampton, C-R-A-M-T-O-N, Auditorium in D.C. And if you go to rsvp@joycollective.com.
Say that again and say it slowly, because most of the people who may be listening right now may be in their cars. And so even though I'm going to post this information, but say it slowly so that people can get a handle on where they can get that information right now.
Thank you. Yeah, we do have a few openings left live in person. So if you would like to join us at Howard University for the event tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, you can go to RSVP. So R is in Ralph, S is in Sherry, V is in Victor, P is in Paul, at joycollective.com. And they will give you all the information to direct you to Crampton Auditorium on Howard's campus. So again, you can join us in the morning, and if you can't be there in person, you can join us on live stream through Roland Martin's channels on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
And that's at 11 o'clock on Roland Martin on YouTube at 11. So for those who may not be able to come to campus, because let's say whether it's two seats or 10 seats, if you come up on campus, you're going to have to wear a mask. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And not just because we're having this discussion, but, I'll just tell you, when I get out of my car and I come in this building, I wear a mask. So that's just the way it is, on campus. So we're just letting you know that that's just the way it is. But if you want to just be safe and get that information, check it out on YouTube. Hearing that, Dr. Yolandra, your thoughts about this, because you've been on this program and you've had to give pushback to some of our listeners about Tuskegee and some of the misinformation and concerns that they've heard.
Right. Certainly in wearing both my physician hat and my public health expert hat, I hear it a lot. And it isn't, unfortunately, limited to Tuskegee. We have present day reasons why people have a distrust of the medical community. When we think about physicians like Dr. Susan Moore, who lost her life to COVID last January because of implicit bias during her care when she was suffering through COVID, that speaks to why people are concerned. As a pediatrician, I'm used to vaccine hesitancy. People don't bring Tuskegee up when they argue and debate whether or not we should give their children vaccines, and this has been the case for the past 10 years. So this isn't anything new to me as it relates to parents and individuals within the community who are concerned about vaccine safety. And no matter how much I pull out data and demonstrate the facts, there's certain times where people will subscribe to a narrative that can only be countered by other individuals that they fully trust. Sometimes it's me, sometimes it's their cousins, right? And I think it's important for community leaders, community organizations like those that were just listed to join in the fight so that people are fully educated about what it was, what the Tuskegee experiment was, and what it was not, so that if that is the factor in them deciding whether or not they're going to get vaccinated, that certainly is addressed. But I think it's also a bigger picture. I just did a bunch of community talks just last week and had folks asking questions. As an example, Bright Beginnings, which is an organization in the District of Columbia that helps new parents and their little ones excel from 0 to 3. And a lot of the employees had questions and concerns that are reflective of what we hear in the community. And to be able to just have good conversation, just Black folks talking, it wasn't Dr. Hancock with all my academician background, but it was just Yolandra having a conversation with her community members and being able to, in a very diplomatic and respectful way, address what their concerns were and being able to answer the questions that they had without making them feel silly or insignificant in the concerns that they had. And I think that's what's most important.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is our COVID-19 update that we are having more and more frequently as we are seeing infections numbers on the rise. We are seeing, unfortunately, mortality rates beginning to rise, the Delta variant becoming more and more of an issue. If you have a comment, if you have a question regarding COVID-19, vaccinations, masks, vaccines, anything, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Antonio, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I just wanted to know a couple of things. So the vaccination itself, if you get vaccinated, why is it that you still have to wear a mask? And two, why is the rate of infection going up and you got a lot of people vaccinated? So if it's a true vaccine, why isn't it working as such?
That's such an excellent question. Dr. Yolandra?
Sure. I'll handle both of them if I can. So the first question in terms of why do those who are vaccinated need to wear masks, what we know between, we'll use the mRNA vaccines as a first example, the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines are between 93% to 96% effective against us becoming infected with COVID-19. So if you had 100 people vaccinated, you would still have between 4 and 7 people who would still get infected even in the face of a vaccine, because the vaccine is not 100% effective. Very rarely is there a vaccine that is 100% effective. And when you think about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine at having an efficacy of around 72%, that still means that of 100 people who are vaccinated against the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, 18 people are still at risk for getting COVID-19. So in the face of that, it still makes sense to wear a mask because you are still at risk in that small percentage. But what we also know is that in the face of vaccination, the severity of your illness is significantly low and the risk of you having to be hospitalized is very, very tiny. We know that over 99% of those who are now hospitalized with COVID-19 are in the unvaccinated population. So clearly the vaccine is working for those who are vaccinated. The reason why our new case rate is so high is twofold. One, because we have not yet reached herd immunity. Across the country, we have not yet reached even 60% of the population being vaccinated. And when you look at countries specifically in the South and in the Midwest, you're looking at vaccination rates, full vaccination rates of between 30 to 40% in states like Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. When you add on top of that the Delta variant, which is twice as infectious as the Alpha variant, which is twice as infectious as the original COVID-19 virus, you're talking a quadruple risk of infection with this new variant. And what we saw even in the beginning of June was that only maybe about 6% of new cases were due to the Delta variant. As of today, 88% of new cases of COVID-19 are due to the Delta variant for a variety of reasons. It's more virulent, meaning this Delta variant creates more virus, and the more virus the body is exposed to, the higher the likelihood of you becoming infected. And two, it's a stickier version of COVID-19, so it sticks inside your airway much more readily, making it easier for you to get the infection. So you can spread it faster, and you get infected faster. That's why we're seeing the numbers go up.
And one of the other things, Antonio, I do want to add, and you may have missed this at the beginning of the conversation, Missouri, Texas, and Florida, they make up 40% of all new infections. And we are seeing that, unfortunately, some of the southern states that have been particularly slow to get vaccinated, Alabama, for example, only 30% of the population of Alabama is vaccinated, and they are seeing a humongous rise in infections. And there has been, as you know, over the past several years, a politicization of the vaccine, and indeed of the disease, where you have, and you've seen some of the, you know, the news stories where you have people who did not believe that COVID-19 was real, even on their deathbeds. And then you had some people who wanted the vaccine during their last hours. And so that is what is happening. And that's why you have people like Governor Kay Ivey of Alabama, who is now urging people to get the vaccine when months ago that was not the case. Antonio, thank you so much for giving us a call and paying attention. Trina calling from Clinton, we're going to talk to you next. Sherry Thompson with the Ad Council, thank you so much. Good luck tomorrow. We will be in touch. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. Our COVID-19 update continues. Lines will stay open. We're answering your questions all the way up until 8 o'clock. So please stay with us. Stretch is next. He's in for John Mons with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation will be back in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our COVID-19 update. Why are we going in the wrong direction when it comes to COVID infections? My guest is Dr. Yolandra Hancock. She's a pediatrician and advisory board member for Mask America. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines. Trina calling from Clinton. Trina, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My concern, first of all, I'm a 63-year-old African-American black woman. And in college was my first exposure to the Tuskegee situation and among other health-related kinds of demosity that happened to our culture, our people. And I'm not understanding why the health industry, especially black folks who are doctors, the politicians, entertainers, they're all saying, well, the Tuskegee, it just wasn't what we thought it was or what we were told or what the narrative was. But the fact of the matter is, for me, is that there was something that did happen, and it was a disparaging moment that cost lives of our black elders. And I don't understand how anyone could get on national TV and say, okay, it wasn't this, it was that. It still was a murderous attempt on black folks, and we can't just disregard the intent. We can't disregard any of what has been going on for years, all the way back to the Indians, and say, oh, well, you know, that's not what it was. This is what it was, and we have to be more educated. The intent is not any different. And I don't understand how people just don't see that. And I can understand. I haven't taken the shot. Nobody in my family has taken the shot. And I don't understand how these people can expect us to just kind of look the other way and say, oh, well, you know, it didn't really happen like it was told it happened. But we all know that something did happen, and it wasn't in good intentions. So how can we trust them going forward?
Dr. Yolandra? Dr. Yolandra, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, did you hear her question?
I did. So, you know, she makes an excellent point. I think one of the reasons why people felt the need to clarify was that there was some misunderstanding about what the Tuskegee experiment was. A lot of people believe that it was purposeful administration of syphilis, causing people to have syphilis, and then there being complications from that. In actuality, it was a bunch of black men who had syphilis, and with knowing that there was a treatment, penicillin, which we still use now, knowing that there was an effective treatment, the Public Health Service Corps, made up of physicians through the U.S. government, consciously made a decision not to provide this known successful treatment because they wanted to understand how syphilis manifested through its full course. Now, does that make it any less bad? Absolutely not. I think it's just a matter of understanding what it was and what it wasn't, but not to belittle it, but for people to make an informed understanding of how this all played out. But to the caller's point, it doesn't really matter. They still allowed people to walk around not only with syphilis, but infecting their loved ones with it, likely having generational impact because there's something called congenital syphilis. If a parent is not treated and then a mother has it and conceives, those are all valid reasons why someone should still be upset about what happened back then. But what we have to understand is that although only 4% of the physicians in this country are African American, we aren't over here sipping the Kool-Aid. We are fully aware of the biases, both the obvious and the not so obvious biases in medicine, and we are collectively working very hard to address it. But this didn't begin with Tuskegee, and it certainly isn't going to end with Tuskegee. When you think about the founding father of modern gynecology, he did experiments on enslaved women and children, but he still has statues up, right? That's not talked about in medical school. It wasn't until I did my own research that I learned about it. We don't learn that Imhotep was truly the father of medicine. Instead, we learn about Hippocrates. So we have to fully understand how all of this played out, how it certainly integrates into how black people see the medical system. But when you have experiences like some of us have had, even in 2020 and 2021, that speak to the narrative that was created by the Tuskegee experiment, it's easy to understand why people are at least cautious as they are considering this vaccine. But to her point, it should not belittle how significant and severe what they did was, but it's really making sure that we have a full understanding of what the actuality of the Tuskegee experiment was.
And I would also ask or add, you know, Trina, you said you are, you know, 63. Are you vaccinated? I'm not talking about against COVID. I'm talking about against polio.
Well, obviously, I had all the shots.
Well, that's okay. Yes. That's my point. Or, you know, and we could talk about you may or you may not get the flu shot. If you get sick, if something happens to you, if you have chest pains, are you going to go to a hospital or are you going to sit at home and say, because of the Tuskegee experiment, I'm not going to go to the hospital because I don't know what the white man is going to do to me if I go to the hospital?
Well, see, that's not my point.
My point. And hold on, let me make my point. Because I understand your point, and what Dr. Yolandra is saying is I think that there's one thing to be fully understanding about what happened with Tuskegee. I don't think that it is correct to make the comparison. No, what happened with the Tuskegee experiment was absolutely horrific. But I don't think that we should make the comparison between what happened with the Tuskegee experiment and compare that to COVID or the flu shot or epinephrine for people who have asthma, which is what I had when I was a kid. Or, you know, and so I think that is the education piece. Yes, I think it is for the Trinas and for the Harolds and for the Dr. Yolandras. It is extremely important for us to be well educated and understand what happened to our people, and to be well aware of that history. But and to ask questions, but I don't think that it is an accurate comparison, because, and we've had this conversation quite a bit with Dr. Frederick here at Howard University, and it's kind of a catch-22, and Dr. Yolandra can talk about this too. On one hand, you know, Black people will say, how do we know that this works? Because nobody asked us. But when they ask us, we don't want to answer. And we're talking about testing for Dr. Laundrie, help me with the term.
In terms of clinical trials.
Thank you very much. Clinical trials, exactly. And that has always been an issue, whether it was aspirin or cancer treatments, because as we know, or heart treatments, because we know, for example, that women present differently as it relates to are heart-related ailments when compared to men. Black women present differently when it relates to breast cancer when compared to white women in some cases. So I think, Trina, you are spot on when you need to ask these questions. But, and I'm not going to belabor the point, but I think that you can't compare Tuskegee to COVID, because everybody's getting COVID. And we have seen during the course of the past year that because Black people had these comorbid situations, diabetes, obesity, and all these other issues, that we died in droves more than any other people of color, because of these comorbidities. Go ahead and make your point, then I've got to move on.
Well, I would only make the point that we're always being told that Black people have worse scenarios with any type of disease. Mm-hmm. And look at, for example, sickle cell. I mean, how many trials and investigations are being done to cure that? That's predominantly a Black disease. But yet they want us to believe that with COVID, since predominantly Black people are getting and dying from that they're doing anything and everything that they can to save us. And we know that's not the case, because if they're saving us on the health end, they're killing us on the other end with all the other issues that we have in our community, with the drugs and the guns, that we don't own any gun shops and we don't own any
I don't want to go down the rabbit hole about guns. Let's stick with COVID. So. Wait. Yeah.
I think we too have here. Can I jump in, Mr. Fisher?
Please go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So when we look at, when we pay attention to who's vaccinated, right? Just when the vaccine first rolled out, because I get this question a lot, especially from my people, and I ask them, I say, why do you think white people who had never been on the green line, why do you think white people went to Ward 8 in D.C. to get the COVID-19 vaccine, who never thought to go into Ward 8 before, until it was time to get the COVID vaccine? White people never thought to step foot onto Native American reservations in the Midwest. But they had now what's called vaccine tourism, where they would show up in communities of color because we weren't taking on the vaccine. Do you what do we think is going on that white folks are coming to get the shots that we don't want to get, right? 60% of the folks who have received the vaccine have been Caucasian. 60% of our population thus far is Caucasian. We make up, as Black people, almost 13% of the population, but only 9% of those who have received the vaccine. So clearly there's a disparity, and it isn't just an issue of access. In Prince George's County, they had to send back vaccine because they couldn't find enough people to accept the shot. So it isn't just that this is unsafe and it's Tuskegee, because then white folks would get caught up in this whole Tuskegee conspiracy, right? We have to be very cautious in drinking our own Kool-Aid, meaning when you believe a certain thing, what you end up studying, reading, and believing is what you already subscribe to. So if you do not trust the government, if you do not trust the medical community, then what you're going to read, watch, and allow to marinate into your spirit is exactly what you already believed. If you believe that you cannot trust the medical system, then you're not going to trust anything about it, whether it be a COVID-19 vaccine or otherwise. And to Mr. Fisher's point, if you don't trust the vaccine, then how do you trust anything else that I as a physician am recommending that you receive? Because if we're trying to, and some of these theories are population control with the vaccine, well, guess what? Population control already happened. The life expectancy in the United States decreased by a year and a half in 2020. So population control is already here, and it was mostly due to COVID, but also due to diseases of despair, alcoholism, substance abuse, suicide and homicide, and chronic diseases. And it was a year and a half in the U.S. population, but 3.3 years black men lost, 2.8 years black women lost, not because of the vaccine, but because of COVID, chronic diseases, and diseases of despair. So we don't have to wait for a vaccine to shorten our life expectancy. One, it was already done because of the social determinants of health, where we are born, grow, live, learn, work, play, pray, and age. But it also is because of all the diseases I just mentioned. So the vaccine is only going to correct that life expectancy loss that we are experiencing at a disproportionate level. And what ends up happening is that when we as black people subscribe to these conspiracy theories about the medical system and the government trying to control us, kill us, and silence us, when what they're really trying to do, based on the work that Kizzy Corbett, Dr. Kizzy Corbett did, a black woman, a black scientist who helped give us the Moderna vaccine, like, is she also part of this conspiracy theory to put money in Bill Gates and Dr. Fauci's pockets? Like, people have to really start critically analyzing some of these conspiracies that they're really subscribed to see how well does it make sense when especially a black woman who's leading the research is the one who's provided one of the most common vaccines we're using in this country.
Yeah. Trina, thank you so much. Stay safe, please. Thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are doing our COVID-19 update. James, calling from Wilmington, Delaware. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. How everyone's doing today?
Doing just fine.
That's good. Quick question. What other alternatives do folks have besides the vaccine? Because in the media, it's like the vaccine is the one all be all, and there has to be some other alternative. It just, in my opinion, it just can't be the vaccine. So why we haven't heard any other alternative? I have heard it on another radio show, but that's it.
You say that again. What have you heard on another radio show that there is an alternative?
Yes, I've heard I won't name the show, but
please don't.
Please,
I don't want you to do that because
I won't do that.
No, only because that would do a disservice not only to this program but to the people who are listening. Because I'm sure, as Dr. Yolandra will tell you, vaccine is it short of living in a hermetically sealed tube until there is an absolute positive cure for this. Dr. Yolandra?
Right. It's an excellent question because it really speaks to folks who are into naturopathic spaces, right? I am as probably granola as you're going to get when it comes to a Western trained doctor. I'm all about essential oils and I'm a Reiki healer. But you can walk and chew gum at the same time. You can boost your immune system. You can eat all your fruits and veggies. You can get your essential oils in, but you can also protect yourself. When you think about diseases like polio, smallpox, Haemophilus influenza, all of the things that used to kill us that don't anymore, it's because of vaccines. It wasn't because of herbal remedies. It wasn't because of essential oils. And I believe in this stuff. Like, I'm all about all of that. But what is Public Health 101, the master's in public health that I have from Johns Hopkins University, my MD and my specialization in pediatrics,
all of that for almost 20 years tells me, based on my experience, knowledge, and my own personal history of being fully vaccinated, is that the most effective, the most rapid way for us to get out of this pandemic, plus your essential oils and your high-dose vitamin C, is to get this vaccine. That's the way for us to reach herd immunity. Now, you can sit back, but if you decide to sit back, you better wear your mask 24/7 when you're out and about in circles with people where you either don't know their vaccination status or they're not in your COVID circle. So those who are unvaccinated still need to maintain a COVID circle. They still need to be masked up when they are in indoor spaces around people that they do not know, even when they are in outdoor spaces. If you are less than 6 feet apart from the person that you don't know their status of, then you need to have your mask on. That's really your option. And when you think about it, masks themselves, depending on what mask you're wearing, are not necessarily going to be effective for you. There's still a slight risk of you getting the COVID-19, especially with this Delta variant, which is the biggest, baddest variant there is. And just so you know, I always use this analogy. Waiting on a vaccine is like playing in dodgeball, right? You know that movie, if you can dodge a ball, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball? Well, guess what? You're playing dodgeball right now, and the fewer people who are on the court because we got tagged out because we either got the infection ourselves or we got vaccinated means that there are fewer people on the court, which means you on the court, your risk is higher of getting sick. But this isn't old school COVID. This is new school COVID. So you're not going to get hit by the bouncy rubber ball. You're going to get hit upside the head by the wrench because you're twice as likely to be hospitalized with the Delta variant. You're four times as likely to get the infection, and we still do not know yet whether or not there's an increased risk of death associated with this. So if y'all want to play Russian roulette with the Delta variant, and as time progresses, because of survival of the fittest in the way that viruses work, the more a virus replicates, the more it's going to mutate. And over time, you're going to see bigger, badder, stronger versions of COVID than you did even with the Delta variant. So those who are waiting for vaccines are going to be exposed to a stronger, more virulent version than those in 2020, which is yet another reason why it's important. Unless you are under the age of 12 and cannot get a shot, immunocompromised in a certain capacity and cannot get vaccinated, or have any other health condition that disallows you from being vaccinated, your best bet, your highest level of protection, your most effective level of protection is to get vaccinated.
And while we have James on, and something that we haven't heard a lot about, Dr. Yolandra, can you talk a little bit about the Lambda variant? It's another one of those Greek names. I mean, certainly we've heard about the Delta variant, and they were talking about Greek names so as not to apply stigmas to countries. Certainly the Delta variant first discovered in India. But there has been some discussion about a Lambda variant, which is just, as you said, another variant that could be the next evolution in this disease.
Right. So there's Delta, there's Delta Plus, and there's now Lambda. With the Lambda variant, it came out of South America, as you guys likely know. While India was being decimated by COVID-19 and these variants were being burst out of that country, out of countries like Peru and Brazil, we see the Lambda variant. The Lambda variant was in about 30 countries in South America. We have now seen Lambda variant arrive in the United States. There have been at least 6 cases of Lambda variant, specifically in Texas was the last reporting of it. It is also associated with a higher risk of infection. It is also associated preliminarily with a higher risk of hospitalization. We do not yet know with the Lambda variant whether or not it is associated with a higher risk of death. With all of these variants, what we also don't know is how it's impacting our children. From what I've heard from colleagues across the country, the Delta variant has hit our children much harder. We're having higher numbers of children being hospitalized by COVID. So adults have to recognize that when they choose not to get vaccinated, they're putting their children at risk. Children more often than not get COVID-19 from the adults in their lives, not the children that are around them. So when we're talking about sending our kids to camp, sending them back to school, what's going to determine that is what we do as adults. With the Lambda variant now showing up, it puts us at even higher risk of our children being impacted.
And I would just say, James, and I say this on this program all the time, I understand, the concern. I understand the concern. Yeah, I had concern but maybe for a day. But the reason I had concern about the vaccine for a day was because I was a pretty sickly kid, and I had to take a lot of medicine in order to get to a point where I had a sense of normal health like my young peers. And so my attitude at a very, very young age was, I'm so tired of being sick. Mm-hmm. And if this stuff is going to make me be able to run like the guys on the street, breathe like the guys on the street, not sniffle, not sneeze, not give it to me. Because I got tired of being sick, and I got sick and tired of watching my parents be sick and tired of me being sick. And so that's kind of where my attitude is. Everybody's not like that. And I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah, I've been vaccinated since February 28th. My mom's vaccinated. My dad's vaccinated. My stepmother's vaccinated. My sister, her husband, my daughter. Everybody in my family's vaccinated. We're still here. There's so many people who are not. Something to think about. James, thank you for listening. Thanks for calling. Be safe, man. I appreciate your time. Let's go to Andre, calling from D.C. Andre, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Fisher?
I am doing just fine, Andre. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. My wife, like, and daughter, we're like that family that's on the fence because, I'm pretty nervous about taking it, the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I watch like videos and things like that of what it can do. So my question was, why don't we be patient, like, and adopt more holistic ways of getting well versus quickly getting a shot? Because I personally think when we shut down, I think we open back up too soon, and I think the vaccine is meant for people that want to hurry up and live their life instead of doing it the more patient way where you can eliminate it totally and just everybody build their immune. Like, why isn't that a consideration?
Dr. Yolandra?
It's a great question. You know, first, I'll be fully transparent in terms of my own process and getting vaccinated. I had access to the vaccine back in December, but because, like every other Black person in this country, I was like, hold up, wait a minute, let me see what this is about. I didn't get my vaccine until March. So, Harold, you got yours before me. But I did it in a very scientific way. I wanted at least 10% of the population to get the vaccine because that's a decent sample size in science studies, right? I look at the data coming out of the vaccine adverse event reporting system to see what the side effects were, and were the risks of the side effects with the vaccine any higher than the risk associated with COVID-19, and none of them were. As a Black woman over the age of 45 with a history of asthma, with a 60-something-year-old mother in the house who has a ton of comorbidities, I had no other choice once I knew that the vaccine was safe but to get the vaccine myself, and had no qualms about it when it was time once I was able to evaluate the data. So it isn't that I drank the Kool-Aid back in December. I understand why people have to critically analyze because I did it myself. But when it comes to this holistic approach, again, as I mentioned before, I'm as granola as you're going to find in a Western-trained doctor. I'm a Reiki 3 healer and a doula. But what I also know is that in order for us to be over this, in order for you, as you mentioned, for this to quote-unquote go away, one of two things has to happen. Either we all have to sit in our houses for at least 30 to 45 days so that no one is exposed to COVID and it can't be transmitted, or everyone gets vaccinated to the point where we reach herd immunity, and the 20 to 30% of people who decide not to get vaccinated are protected because the rest of us did what we were supposed to do in creating that herd immunity. Those are the only two options. You can't just say, we don't need to get vaccinated. We just need to bulk up on vitamins A, B, C, D, E, zinc, and echinacea and elderberry. That's not going to stop COVID-19 from being transmitted, especially not the Delta variant. And it isn't that I'm opposed to it. I'm all tanked up with my vitamins, but I'm also vaccinated because I know that those vaccines will boost my immune system. But that does not necessarily mean that my body's going to have the capacity to fight off a stronger, bigger, badder version of COVID than what we were exposed to back in March.
And I think, Andre, I think, respectfully, people aren't getting vaccinated so they can live their best life. People are getting vaccinated so they can live.
Right.
And don't forget, we've had more than 600,000 people in this country alone die from this disease. These are people who were dropping like flies. The people who, without this disease, likely would still be alive today. So, you know, 600,000 people. The District of Columbia has just under 700,000 people. Can you imagine stepping out on the streets of D.C. and hearing no one? 600,000 people, that's almost, the population of D.C. So this isn't about people trying to live their best life. And there's nothing wrong with being on the fence.
Right.
It's better to be on the fence and trying to make a decision as opposed to, still being in the house looking at the fence. And, you may or you may not get there. And this stuff, sometimes this stuff will hit home. We lost our beloved Patrick Ellis. And that's something that, will always hurt, the WHUR family, will hurt this city. So, without COVID-19, Patrick was fine. And, it's very likely that he would still be with us. Very likely that a lot of people would still be with us. Dr. Yolandra, I've got about 30 seconds. It's some final thoughts. This has been a spirited conversation. I'm glad you were with us.
Me too. I think it's important, particularly for African Americans, just communities of color, to know that we are disproportionately impacted by COVID-19 infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. 1 in 3 Black folks have lost a loved one, where 1 in 10 white people have. That speaks not only to the level of loss that we have experienced, but the mental health impact, the anguish that we have experienced. Why put family members through that? You're talking otherwise healthy 30 and 40-something-year-olds who are losing their lives. This isn't grandma at 90. This is John at 42.
Yeah.
That's what we have to appreciate.
Dr. Yolandra Hancock, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. You stay healthy. We'll be talking soon. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, July 26th. I'm Harold Fisher.